Before we break here and come back and talk, tell everybody about Consumer Guide Automotive.
Yeah, Consumer Guide. We've been around since 1967. We review every car every day, we like to say. So a full suite of new car reviews at consumerguide.com. Try to have some fun with the car stuff. That's at the CG Daily Drive blog.
All right. And you can check that all out there. And we're going to talk about, we got a bunch of car-related news stories to talk about, some fun stuff that you wrote about. And yesterday, Tom, on the show, in honor of the Fast and the Furious, the latest Fast and the Furious movie, we started talking about the best movie cars and car movies.
Yes.
And I noticed that you wrote a piece based on The Good, the Bad, the Ugly about VW Bugs.
I did, yeah.
All right, and we'll talk about that as well. Hang on, okay, Tom?
Will do.
All right, we're going to talk about that stuff and answer any and all of your car and automotive-related questions. Get them in now. Call, text 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200 for your car questions. Yeah. Hey, welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio on the seventh floor of the Trib Tower. And we're here till 5 a.m. Tom Appel is the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. He's a contributor to their Daily Drive blog. You can check out consumerguide.com and follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. And he joins us each month to talk about car-related stories and to answer your automotive questions, any and all of them. So get him in now. Talk or text 312-981-7200. Tom, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right. So the New York Auto Show, is it underway now or has it closed?
That's over.
It's over. And you didn't go, but some of the staff at CG did.
That's right. Yeah, we covered that pretty much top to bottom.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about what was covered and what were the standouts at the New York Auto Show.
Yeah, the New York Auto Show tends to get a lot of content from European luxury makers. And true to form, Porsche was busy there and Mercedes-Benz was busy there. And that's the big stuff. And then we had the reveal, and you were talking yesterday about Fast and the Furious, the new movie in that series.
Yeah.
Tying in with that, Dodge revealed the Dodge Demon, a vehicle they've been teasing now for weeks, if not months.
Yeah, now I read about it, and they pulled out all the bells and whistles for this thing, huh?
Yeah, the amount of PR that was put into this is completely disproportionate to the volume of cars they're going to sell. But I mean, it worked. They owned social media for 3 months, so it worked.
Yeah, and I mean, and so you had race car driver Leah Pritchett there.
Yes,
they had that. They had her there, and then Vin Diesel came out, and then they drove one of the demons out onto the stage.
They did, and then they had the event in a giant hall where they were able to do very short bursts of, they weren't full quarter miles, but little blasts of speed inside there, to the delight of attending media.
Yeah, and Wiz Khalifa showed up, so there was a strong odor of marijuana in the room. tell everybody about this car. It's insane.
It is insane.
It's completely insane.
They're going to limit production to 3,300 vehicles, 3,000 for the U.S., 300 for Canada. But if you're familiar with the Dodge Challenger, it was about a year ago, maybe that's almost 2 years ago, that Dodge rolled out the Hellcat, which was going to be the all and end all of high-performance vehicles. And that was just packed full of 707 horsepower, supercharged V8 power, very fast car. Well, The Demon one-ups that one, and it's very specifically built for drag racing. So it's got wider rear-end tires. It's got very small front tires. It's got up to 840 horsepower, a number that's just absurd.
It's crazy.
But, yeah, when you figure that a Prius is about 100 horsepower, just to put things into perspective.
Well, it also goes from 0 to 60 in 2.3 seconds.
Yeah, I don't understand that time at all.
Who needs that?
That's a very good question.
Oh, man. Now, I saw the new Fast and the Furious movie, The Fate of the Furious. Have you seen it yet, Tom?
I have not seen it. My guy Damon went to see it today, so we may have a review up soon.
Okay, because, I mean, there's a demon in it.
Yes.
And you know, because I saw the movie, I couldn't tell you which one was, because there's so many crazy vehicles in this movie. And like now they're driving tanks and stuff. I mean, it went from a nice little movie 15 years ago or 16 years ago about illegal street racing to, giant submarines shooting missiles at the Rock while driving a tank. That's what it's turned into now.
So it's scaled up a little bit.
A little, yeah, just a little. But I couldn't tell you. Do you know who drives? Does Vin Diesel drive it in the car in the movie?
You know, I don't know. Okay. I don't know who drives. It must be Vin Diesel.
Yeah, it probably is.
If you're paying Vin Diesel money to have Vin Diesel show up at a New York Auto Show press event.
Right.
It's got to be him.
Yeah, it's got to be. It's got to be. He drives a few different cars in the movie, and they're all pretty cool, as they would be. So, and what else came out of the New York Auto Show that besides this insane demon?
Well, my favorite vehicle, Porsche brought up the Panamera a few years ago, and a lot of people were horrified. This is a sedan, a relatively large sedan that Porsche now sells. It's a little bit along the lines of Mercedes-Benz S-Class. Well, for 2018, they're going to bring out a station wagon version of that car. No one ever says station wagon.
Oh, seriously, an actual station wagon, Tom?
Yeah, it'll be called Touring, but it's gorgeous. It's drop-dead gorgeous. And you'll find that a lot of people who love cars really love station wagons. They're just kind of practical, they're kind of counterculture, and this is just absolutely stunning.
Wow.
Yeah,
I haven't heard the term. That's the first time I've heard somebody say station wagon and not referring to a car from the 70s.
Yeah, no one calls them station wagons. There's touring, there are estates, there's something like that. No one says station wagon, but yeah, that's what it is.
Is that a taboo, Tom?
A little bit. In the U.S., there's all sorts of pushback against it. So you call things wagons, you call them crossovers. You don't say station wagon.
Right, okay. All right, anything else that pops out from the New York show?
That was the big stuff. That's the stuff that excited me.
Okay, there you go. And people can read the articles about it. You guys covered it top to bottom at consumerguide.com.
Yeah, from there you've got to go to the blog. But, yeah, it's right there.
It's on the blog, and that's the Daily Drive blog. Okay.
Uh-huh.
All right, Tom, hang on, okay?
Will do.
All right, we got Tom Appel with us, and Tom joins us he joins us. Hold on, I'm pressing the wrong button here. There we go. That's what I needed to do. I was pressing 53 buttons at the same time, Dan. What the hell's happening? Anyway, that's Tom Appel. He's from Consumer Guide Automotive, and he is here to answer any and all of your car and automotive-related questions. If you're looking for a car and you need some help, 312-981-7200. And you can follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. We've got many news stories to talk about as well, and more car stuff is going to happen after we take a break here on WGN and get to the news, which is next. Hello, good morning, everybody. Hi, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of Trib Tower. We're here till 5 a.m. And Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5 and Steve Cochran at 6. And a little bit later on, we're going to talk about things that you've been doing wrong all your life. And we have some life hacks for you, some shortcuts on how to do it right. And also we'll talk about how you can spring clean like a pro, because the spring cleaning time is here. And, we'll talk a little bit about that and give you a little preview of what's going to be happening at the Millennium Park Summer Film Series. That's all coming up. But right now we're talking cars and everything automotive. Tom Appel is the publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. He's a contributor to their Daily Drive blog. You can follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. He joins us every month to talk cars and automotive stuff, and we welcome Tom back. Welcome back, Tom.
Thank you.
Okay. We have a call here from Joe on WGN. Go ahead, Joe.
Well, first a comment, Nick. This is my favorite segment of your shows. I love it. And, Tom, I don't know if this is your bailiwick or not, but you hear these ads on TV all the time for True Car, you know, make sure you get the right price on a car, so forth and so on.
Uh-huh.
And now Costco is, I've heard a couple pros and cons, mostly pros. Costco will take the car that you choose, what model you want, what, you know, accoutrements you want for the car, if you will, whatever. They'll buy it for you and sell it to you. Do you have any experience in that area?
I don't have any direct experience with it, but the Costco program has been around, I think, for better than a decade now, and I haven't heard anything especially bad about it. My brother-in-law swears by the program. He's purchased two cars through it. What Costco is essentially doing is buying the car from local dealers, and they negotiate a price, and it varies by region. So if you live in Chicago, it's going to be different than if you lived in, say, Denver. It's a fairly safe way to buy a car because the price is set in advance. So you may not be getting the best possible price, but you're probably getting a very good price for the car. And as it turns out, the people who buy the car generally pretty happy with the price they get.
Any negative? You said it's mostly positive. Any negatives whatsoever?
The single negative is that generally, if you really wanted to, if you were a complete bulldog about it, you could probably get a better price if you really, really tried. But it's always hard to know. And prices change so much lately because of things they call stair-step incentives. You never know how much money a dealership is getting from the factory, that it's very hard for individuals to negotiate the best possible price. And I think that, for the most part, you can be very comfortable with the price you get through a program like this.
Gotcha.
Okay, Joe.
Appreciate it.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye. There you go. All right. And all right. So we have a couple of texts, and one of them, Tom, deals with a story that we were going to talk about anyway. And Robert sends in a text that says, I heard Tesla now is worth more than GM.
Yes.
But they don't get a ton of government subsidies. And isn't each Tesla purchased, they have its price reduced by tax incentives. Wouldn't car companies like GM or Ford be doing better if they had the same brakes?
There's two parts to that. Yes, to some extent, Tesla's cars are tax incentivized by the government, but there's two things going on there. One, Tesla used to get or did get some loans from the government. It was a lot of money. It was a half a billion or $1 billion up front that they borrowed from the government very cheap. So that was a huge aid to Tesla. Additionally, there is the federal tax incentive, $7,500 on pure electric vehicles. Because every Tesla is electric and every Tesla is over the 16 kilowatt hour by a lot battery minimum for the tax credit, every single Tesla car that Tesla sells gets that incentive. Whereas at General Motors, where 2 or 3% of the cars they sell are pure electric, only those cars get that tax incentive. So it seems like a huge assistance to the manufacturer. However, there's a caveat here, and that this is capped at 200,000 units. And Tesla's going to go over that in the next 18 months, so they're going to lose that advantage very soon.
Wow. And what are some of the other reasons that Tesla is now worth more than GM?
Just Wall Street speculation.
Oh.
Yeah, it's just that the price of the stock is very high, given the fact that the company has never turned a profit.
Oh, okay. All right. And it's funny because, you know, that's we're talking about the electric cars, and that brings us to another story, a local story. Thanks to the VW settlement, Chicago is going to get some money for vehicle charging infrastructure?
Yeah, we badly need it. But we're going to get is some chargers. Volkswagen's huge, huge settlement included money for people who own the Volkswagens. But the government, too, extracted its money as part of the punitive damages against Volkswagen. And the government is reassigning that money. Essentially, they're telling Volkswagen that, well, you're going to have to pay for these electric vehicles since you screwed up with diesel. And one of the nice things is that there's a pool of over $1 billion that's being split up between major metropolitan areas. And a lot of this money is going to New York and to D.C. and to Chicago for charging stations. So what we're going to see are level two charging stations go up in Chicago in public places, which is going to be a boon to the drivability of electric cars around here.
Currently, do we have just a small number of charging stations?
Yes, and very few of them are public, essentially. One of the nice group Walgreens has a number of them, and they're part of a network, so you pay to use them. They're a little bit expensive to use up front, and they don't really make sense economically. They're more there in case of an emergency. So if there were public stations out there that were either nominally, you know, just with a nominal charge, or they were free, that would go a long way to making driving electric cars easier.
Is every city that's receiving a chunk of this money from the VW settlement using it for the same thing?
I think so, yeah. I think it's specifically allocated for charging stations.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. We got a text here from Michael who says, what's the difference of the different color antifreezes that they have for cars now?
Wow. I don't remember the specific differences. But the reason they were different is because the antifreeze goes into either cars with aluminum blocks and aluminum heads or cast iron blocks and cast iron heads. Yeah, and you can't mix the two, so you want to make sure you use the right stuff. I can't remember specifically what those colors were.
Okay, all right. And 708 area code says, hey, guys, how do I know when I need new tires? I have 39,000 miles on them. Are they nearing the end of their life cycle?
You can't do it by mileage anymore because tires are so much better and they last so much longer. But there still is the old penny test, the Lincoln's head test.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and that's classic and it works because I think that's 3/32nds of an inch, and that's how much they say you need to get through a Chicago winter. So that's right there. So if you stick a penny upside down into the tire, and if you can see or can't see the top of Lincoln's head, The old legend goes, and it makes perfect sense, you need new tires.
I love that that still works.
Yeah, it's classic.
Yeah,
it's cool.
You know, with all the crazy technology and what's happening in the world of cars now, you can still stick a penny in a tire and go, I need new tires. I think that's I like that.
That's golden.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's see. For 708 area code says, for reference, 0 to 60 in 3 seconds equals 1 gravity acceleration or 1 G.
Okay.
All right, in case you want to just, you know, break your eardrums in that demon. I just keep picturing, you know, like I'm just like, you know, flooring that car. And I just, I'm picturing that scene in Spies Like Us where, where you know what I'm talking about, Tom?
I haven't thought about that movie in a long time.
Which, it's a funny movie with Chevy Chase and Dan Aykroyd in that gravity thing where they're being whipped around the room and then their faces stick when they get out. That's when they're giving them the most ridiculous tests of all time. They basically are, at one point, they're setting them on fire. That's a very funny movie.
That's a funny movie.
All right, listen, let's talk about some of the stuff that you have written for the CG Daily Drive. You went back and you looked at, I love this, man, the five best-looking cars of 1970. Tell us a little bit about, you know, the choices that you made there.
Yeah, that's kind of a sweet spot for me, and I don't know why, but I just love the early 70s for car design, and there's a couple of beautiful cars there. And I picked 70 sort of randomly one morning because I didn't really feel like writing about anything substantial. So this gave me a chance to go through really old issues of Consumer Guide and look at pictures. So that's the kind of thing I can get away with at work sometimes.
That's great. But you chose some great cars.
Good. Yeah, I love these. I absolutely love these.
It's the 1970 Pontiac Firebird. Tell me a little bit about you. What appeals you to about that car?
The Firebird, the 70 Firebird, and the 70 Camaro, which looked a lot like it. These were just flat out beautiful cars. And I know we think of them as really strange and sort of disco scented when they got into the 70s and 80s, later in the 70s and 80s. But the early Firebirds and Camaros were just flat out beautiful cars. I mean, they were every much as beautiful as early Ferraris and Lamborghinis.
Yeah.
And I just absolutely am stuck on those cars.
I had a 78 Firebird.
Yeah.
78 Firebird. And the thing about and I thought the car was, it was in the shop all the time. I mean, all the time. That was I think the most money I ever spent on a car was keeping that one up. But the thing about that car, and it's so weird because if you get used to parallel parking in like a Firebird, and then you get a car that actually has a tail end, you have to like readjust the way you park because there's no tail end on it's all hood.
Yeah, there's no rear overhang at all.
Nothing.
Kind of convenient for parking.
Yeah, it is. But it's also like, you know, when you have a car that has a rear end on it, you're like, oh, wait a minute. I don't have enough room in the back for this spot. So.
Now, the 78s actually had the exact same body panels as the 70s, but because of things like bumper laws and bumper regulations, the front and rear ends kept growing, so they had the plastic caps in the front and the back.
Oh, yeah.
That very distinct look at the late 70s.
Yeah, but I mean, I just remember that car being all hood. I mean, just like the hood went on forever. It was like a football field. So, all right, and then you got the Chevy Nova, and this one was kind of a soft spot for you too, right?
Yeah, my dad had a Nova, and so I don't know that I can be in any way impartial about this, but it's a fantastic looking car.
Yeah, the 70 Nova, yeah. And then the Dodge Dart, which is kind of, do you think people would be surprised that you included the Dodge Dart on this list?
I don't know. This was a very interesting car because there were two different versions of the coupes of these cars, and one was very swoopy. And in this particular case, this is the Dart. This would go on to be the Dart GT in different model years. That's got this great-looking angled rear pillar that's very Chrysler designed at the time. But I think it's just really fantastic looking.
Okay. And then the Chrysler 300. I don't remember that car.
It's a rare car. This is one of the big Chryslers. They called them the fuselage Chryslers in the early 70s because it looked so much like planes. But the 300 was essentially a New Yorker with hidden headlights and less chrome. So you had this really weird badass combination of stealth and huge that I just find really appealing.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. And then finally, the Oldsmobile Toronado. Again, a fantastic name for a car.
Yeah, that such a badass gentleman's car. I just love it. The Riviera and the Toronado were these just great big personal luxury cars that were something smaller than an Eldorado and just slightly less ostentatious, but still huge.
Yeah.
And just slightly more understated. And it's the kind of thing that, like, if Jim Rockford had a little bit more money, he might get out of the Firebird and into a Toro.
I saw that somebody posted on Facebook, and I saw that you replied to it, and so did Steve King, our friend Steve King.
Yeah.
They said, which one would you rather have, the Bandit Firebird from Smokey and the Bandit or Jim Rockford's Firebird from the Rockford Files? And I think overwhelmingly Rockford's car beat the Bandit.
Yeah, and it's got to be Jim's first car, the 74.
Yeah.
Yeah, the 74 with two headlights. That's the better car of all of them.
It was funny. We were talking about, and I want to talk about this when we come back from the break, too, Tom. I want to get your thoughts on your favorite movie cars. And then we have to talk about the piece that you wrote on the VW Beetles as well. But the list that we were looking at, the number one car on the list was the Firebird from Smokey and the Bandit.
Yeah, which is a completely cool car. And when I was in eighth grade, that was the only car.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Hang on a second, okay, Tom?
Will do.
Tom Appel is with us, Consumer Guide Automotive, and you can check out consumerguide.com, and you can follow Tom on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. We'll come back. We got some more texts here we'll get to, answering your questions at 312-981-7200, and then a couple of more stories and movie car talk, because I want to get Tom's input on that as well. Yeah. Hey, hi, everybody. Welcome back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. It's Tuesday. Two for Tuesday. Yeah, man. Two for Tuesday. Two for Tuesday. Yeah. Get your requests in now. One artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Tom Appel is with us. He joins us once a month. He is a publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. He contributes to their Daily Drive blog, and you can follow him on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. And we welcome Tom back to the show. Welcome back, Tom.
Thank you.
Okay. We've got a few texts here, and then we can get to the movie car thing and your Volkswagen Beetle driving 80s movie characters, and somehow you brought up Sergio Leone in this story as well.
I was accused of having created a very tortured metaphor, but yeah.
Okay, so Carrie says, when will the 2019 Ford Ranger midsize actually be available, and what are your opinions on it?
It's probably going to be very good. This vehicle is already on sale in other markets, and it's very popular. It's essentially going to be about the size of the Colorado or the Canyon, the Chevy or GMC that's already on the market. And I expect it to be competitive. But yeah, it'll be off-road ready. It's a full body on frame pickup, just a little bit smaller than their big trucks. And it will probably see it late fall 2018.
Okay. Kevin texts in, my wife wants a new SUV. We currently have a 2004 Hyundai Santa Fe. She likes the new Santa Fe and also the Honda Pilot. I like the Dodge Durango. What are your thoughts?
Wow, those are really different things. The Durango is a much larger, heavier vehicle and a little bit thirstier. If you're ever going to tow or if you always need to make heavy use of the third row, Durango's a way to go. We made it a Consumer Guide Best Buy. But the Honda Pilot, a little bit smaller, a little bit lighter, a little bit more fun to drive, also a great choice. We still have Santa Fe on our Best Buy list as well. There's two Santa Fes, the regular one and the Sport. I presume you're talking about the bigger one, which is also a nice vehicle. It has a surprisingly nice cabin for the money, very upscale feeling. All three are good, and I would test drive all three. Make sure you need the size of the Durango, though. That's okay. Just a lot of truck.
That's a big one.
Yeah.
Okay. 262 area code says, what does Tom think of Subaru's was it 15 or XV Crosstrek?
Full disclosure, I just bought one.
Oh!
That's my wife's current daily driver. We love the Crosstrek.
Okay.
That's their compact. It's essentially their subcompact version of the Outback. And if you don't need all the size of an Outback, but you want the snow protection and you like Subaru, great way to go.
Okay, so you like it, obviously. You just bought one.
Yep.
773 area code. Any info on the Honda HR-V?
Yeah, nice little car. We look at a Consumer Guide a lot. There's a lot of great stuff in that size market. The HR-V is their subcompact crossover. I think it's a little bit underpowered for the class, and I prefer the Mazda CX-3, but I would drive them both. They're both very good, and they're good for different reasons.
Okay, all right. All right, well, you wrote a piece called The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, Three Volkswagen Beetle Driving 80s Movie Characters. that Sergio Leone might have loved. And the idea here was that, well, first of all, was it your daughter who gave you the idea to write this thing?
Yeah, I was supposed to come up with Volkswagen Beetle drivers from movies we'd seen together. And I realized that these movies all came off from just a few years apart, the ones I came up with. And it had nothing to do with her being a love bug, which I was sort of happy about.
Right. So you split them up into the three categories that represent the Sergio Leone title, The Good, The Bad, and The Ugly.
That is what I did.
Okay, so in The Good, you chose Ren, which was Kevin Bacon from Footloose.
Right, good guy, right? He was nicely motivated, respectful of elders, but still had an absolute goal of trying to make people understand that music and dancing weren't bad. Not exactly the same thing as trying to collect the reward for Tuco's indiscretions, but
right.
Fundamentally a good guy.
All right, and the bad, God, you picked M. Emmett Walsh in Blood Simple, Lauren Visser, which is one of the slimiest characters in the history of cinema.
Yeah, I think this one works.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because he's totally a scummy slime bag. And in the movie, Lee Van Cleef, of course, is perfectly willing to turn on anyone who gave him money for more money.
Yeah.
So, yeah, those guys are bad.
I remember specifically in Blood Simple really loving the fact that he was driving a bug. I thought that was really awesome.
Too, because here's a guy who should have a lot of money. He's always involved in something.
Yeah.
But it's not going to his car.
No. And then finally, The Ugly went to Lane, River's Edge, which is, of course, Crispin Glover's unique character. And his VW was tricked out, wasn't it, in that movie?
It was, but you get the sense that not very well. It's riding on what should be really cool dune buggy wheels and tires.
Yeah.
It looks like the back end is lifted a little bit, so you have that dune buggy effect.
Right.
But he actually suggested at some point during the movie that his car would never make it that far.
I haven't seen that movie in a while. I do love that film, though. But that was a fun little piece. Now, if you were to choose some of your favorite movie cars, what would they be?
My favorite movie cars. I heard the conversation yesterday. Producer Dan sent me the link, so the whole thing.
Okay.
That was a great hour of radio.
Thank you.
And I'm going to go back to Harold and Maude. I love the Jaguar hearse so much. And a great part of that story is that when we see that car go off a cliff, the car actually went off a cliff. There is no car left for collectors to try to buy at auction. That car died with.
So they destroyed. They actually destroyed that car.
Yes, they did. And there's a story that goes around, and I don't know if it's true, that they only had one camera on it and it didn't work well. So we just have that one little scene of that one car going off a cliff, and that's it. It died for nothing.
Yeah, that's the 70s making movies, man. That's what they did. Anything else that you would do?
Yeah, in Harold and Maude, too. Harold, or one of the cars that Maude stole, was that fantastic Chevy El Camino that they put the tree in.
Mm.
That's a great car.
Yes.
She also steals a Riviera later in the film, plus that 59 Cadillac hearse that she drives around.
So I guess I had forgotten how great a car movie Harold and Maude is.
Yeah, which is, I think, antithetical to where they would have gone with the movie. I don't know that they wanted it to be a car movie.
Yeah, obviously, if you heard the conversation, so you know that the Mustang from Bullet ranked real high.
Yeah, that's a great car.
Yeah, and I'm all for the insane vehicles that are in the Mad Max movies,
which are also awesome.
I love what they do, and they just put different chassis on things and just they change things around, and it's great because the movies take place in this post-apocalyptic world where you're just picking up scraps and putting a vehicle together. And I love that kind of aesthetic.
Yeah, I love that too. It's sort of like a fictional Cuba.
Yeah,
where cars just have to live longer than they should.
Yeah, exactly. And then, by the way, just so you know, Tom, the opening 15 minutes of The Fate of the Furious takes place in Cuba.
And, oh, perfect. I didn't know that.
Yeah, and it takes place in Cuba. They talk a little bit about the culture, and then they have a big, crazy, insane drag race, which basically ends with Vin Diesel going backwards 90 miles an hour with the car on fire.
Of course.
Yes. That's how you start a Fate of the Furious movie right there. So I hope you enjoy the movie, Tom. I did. I thought it was a lot of fun. So
I need to see it.
Yeah. All right, Tom, always a pleasure. We'll talk to you next month, and people can check you out at consumerguide.com. Follow you on Twitter at car_guy_Tom. Always a pleasure, Tom, and we'll talk to you next month.
Thank you very much.
Okay, buddy. Take care. Tom Appel. He'll join us again next month and go to consumerguide.com. All right, the news is coming up in 16 seconds.